America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. One can only hope another great week. A week better than last week, better than the week before. This has been a grim and difficult moment for the United States of America. I mean, okay, you can say that Delta variant, there are more people getting vaccinated, even in states that have been very, very deeply resistant to the vaccine. And what about that vaccine resistance? A third prominent radio host who had billed himself as the king of the anti-vaxxers died. And this is one, these predecessors, and there are two others. I mean, it's become such a common thing, and it's so terribly sad. And the fact that there are people who are rejoicing over it. And then again, we just lost 13 American servicemen. They now say over 200 Afghans who were killed in that hideous bombing. And then we struck back against that bombing and may have killed more innocent Afghan children. Things are not looking good for the United States or even for our political system right now. When you hear the level of reaction to President Biden, and it's absolutely true, there were lots of terrible things that were said about President Trump as well, but what's particularly difficult here is how does a president recover from having the grieving parents of dead American heroes, and appropriately, flags are at half-staff everywhere to honor those heroes, but having family members basically blame it all on President Biden. The speeches have not worked. The press briefings have not worked. What do you do if you're in that situation in the White House? We'll speak to somebody who has spent time in a very controversial White House, but that navigated its way out of difficult situations fairly effectively, the Bush White House. Ari Fleischer is going to be joining us coming up on the Michael Medved Show, and we'll talk a little bit about how we get out of this level of viciousness where even the idea of receiving the bodies of dead Marines can't bring people together. 1-800-955-1776. It's also this, which is an extraordinary moment when you think about it. There's a Reuters story from August 27th. And the audio is from the 26th or the 27th of Kevin McCarthy speaking in the House of Representatives and lashing out at President Joe Biden over the deaths of 13 U.S. service members in Afghanistan. But he stopped short of joining calls from other Republicans for the Democratic president to resign or face impeachment. He's not going to be impeached, and he's not going to resign. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy instead asked Democratic Speaker Nancy Pelosi to call lawmakers back from an August break to consider legislation that he said would prevent a U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan until all Americans are out of the country. This isn't the tested leadership the president promised. It's a picture of weakness and incompetence, McCarthy told a news conference. There was widespread agreement on that, including from many Democrats. This entire thing has been disgraceful, inept, and it hasn't gotten better. And one doesn't know what happens when we do leave Afghanistan. Evidence that they killed a folk singer because they're trying to ban music. Should Americans be concerned about that, or just say, good riddance, we're going to drop Afghanistan down the memory hole, and all of the sacrifice and all of the American lives and all of the literally trillions of dollars in Afghanistan, it counts for nothing. To be commander in chief, well, here, do we have that audio now, Jeremy? Is it ready? Okay, this is what Kevin McCarthy said on the 27th, 2 days ago. Kevin McCarthy over the weekend. Listen.
What I didn't hear from the president, was his decisive leadership for our troops, our citizens, and our allies of what they deserve. Frankly, this isn't the tested leadership the president promised. It's a picture of weakness and incompetence. To be commander-in-chief, you need the faith, the trust, and the confidence of the American public. President Biden lost all three of those yesterday. Congress can't sit idle as a separate branch of government while troops are targeted and Americans remain stranded. It's time for us to act quickly to save lives. Speaker Pelosi needs to call Congress back in session and do it now. Get a comprehensive classified briefing from the Biden administration and to pass Representative Gallagher's bill to prohibit the president from withdrawing our troops until every single American is out of Afghanistan.
Okay, that is not going to happen, I don't think. Problematic constitutionally, and I'm not sure it's constructive at this point. Right now, whatever you feel about the President of the United States, something must be done because it is a dangerous situation to have a people still in harm's way, and we still have people in harm's way. They're supposed to all be coming home soon or leaving Afghanistan soon. But at what point, when the president says that we will not forgive, we will not forget, we will hunt you down, where are they going to hunt people down? Would that not involve going back to Afghanistan with more troops and more forces? ABC's Martha Raddatz and John Carl talked about this promise to get every single American out of Afghanistan. Credible promise? Listen, this is clip 13.
The political fallout, the political for President Biden. Our new poll with Ipsos shows just 38% of Americans approve of Biden's handling of Afghanistan. 84% say U.S. troops should stay in Afghanistan until all Americans are evacuated. That's not going to happen.
And here's the interesting thing about that poll question, the second one you mentioned, 84%. It's consistent. It's one of the only things I have seen for years, a question where Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, all over 80%, say exactly the same thing, that we should stay until all Americans are evacuated. As you point out, not going to happen.
A really tough thing for President Biden to face.
Okay, really tough thing when you have over 80% of your fellow Democrats taking that position. We'll tell you more about the polling. This goes well beyond what people are fearing on the Democratic side about the upcoming election of 2022. This is a collapse of support, and it does make it more and more questionable whether Biden can even begin to handle the essence of his job, especially with the challenges involving the Delta variant and COVID-19. A demonstration over the weekend against vaccine mandates in Santa Monica, California, that drew some heated words on both sides. We'll cover it all and look for some hope. There's one very hopeful, actually inspiring story involving some Afghan refugees. We'll talk about that and more coming up on The Medved Show. On the mic Michael Medved Show. Ari Fleischer was the primary spokesperson for President Bush during a big stretch of his presidency. He served as spokesman during the historic presidential recount, September 11th, two wars, and the anthrax attack, which many people have forgotten. His best-selling book, Taking Heat, details his years in the White House and hit number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list. Since leaving the White House, Ari has run a communications company. He appears regularly on cable TV and did a terrific tweet that got our attention that we honored as a tweet of the day, saying the only reason this is one of the largest airlifts in history is because this is one of the largest abandonments of history. If this wasn't so botched, there would be few to no people who require evacuation. They would have been brought out months ago. Ari, thanks very much for joining us on a continued difficult day for our country.
I'm glad to be with you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Well, I wanted to speak to you in particular because you had some tough days with President Bush.
You could say that.
Yes, and some historic days, but never like this. Can you remember any occasion where the parents or family of people who had been killed in the line of duty very specifically and heatedly condemned the President of the United States?
Actually, yes. It happened privately. It happened at events at military bases where the president would gather with the families of those who lost their loved ones. And people gave it to him straight. The emotions were raw. It comes with the territory. But the difference, I would say to you, is President Bush had a determination to see it through to victory, to finish what was started so that America could stop terrorism, could accomplish a military mission, and then come home. Now we're seeing it because of a decision to abandon our allies and to carry out a botched military mission, where from the start, the president, the commander-in-chief, hamstrung his military. That's the difference.
And, but again, no, it's the public nature of this, talking about it on radio shows and to the Daily Beast. With the mother of one of the heroes who sacrificed his life last week. I mean, it's even uncomfortable. She describes Biden as a dementia-ridden piece of crap who doesn't even know he's in the White House.
And I hate to disagree with any of the points you're making, but if you recall, there was a woman who publicly, very publicly, took her case against George Bush to his ranch in Crawford, Texas, on behalf of her son.
Oh, yeah.
So, I do understand the emotion of a parent who's lost a child, and I give them tremendous latitude. If you haven't lost a child, no one knows what it's like. And it comes with the territory of being a politician, certainly the commander-in-chief. Joe Biden, though, has just sent such a signal of weakness that the parents who understand that when your son or your daughter serves in the military, there can be a knock at the door. And they're prepared for it. But they're prepared for it in support of the commander-in-chief and support for our country. And I think this has torn families up because they really question whether they can support the commander-in-chief and the mission he's put our country on because it's been so botched.
If you were advising President Biden right now, What advice would you give him? Because I think you're absolutely correct, Ari. This is a distinctive and a particularly difficult position in which he's placed himself.
Well, the advice would have been in April when you made the call that you're bringing the troops home. One, I would have told him, do not pick September 11th as the date. That is a sacred date, meant to memorialize those who lost their lives and for us to be as one with the families. If you want to pick a symbolic date, pick October 7th, the 20-year anniversary of the counterattack into Afghanistan. But having said that, then President Biden's job should have been to prepare the American people for what comes next and what could go wrong. And he never did that. He just set the date and then basically didn't get involved in how it could be, what could go wrong. And when he was first asked about it, if fourth holiday weekend, he said he wanted to take happy questions. He didn't want to talk about Afghanistan. Well, that was the communications botch right there from which there's no recovery. He failed to prepare America for what could go right, what could go wrong, and why it was so necessary. I can see a president making the case to withdraw the troops. I'm equivocal on it, and I don't hesitate to say that. I can see both sides of it. When in October of 2001, we announced we're going into Afghanistan, I never in my wildest dreams thought we'd be there 20 years later. But a case could be made to remain in a support role with 2,500 troops where the Afghans are the ones doing the fighting and the dying, or a case could be made to bring them home. Either way, the job of the president to educate, walk the country through how this is going to look, how it's going to work, and instead, Joe Biden said he only wants to take happy questions. It was a failure of communications and a failure of tactical military planning.
It's also a failure of character, and it's also a failure of leadership on the most basic level. What is the best approach for the Republicans now? Not for the sake of gaining political advantage, but for the sake of bringing the country back together and back in focus.
Well, one, there does have to be an investigation into this, into how it got this way, particularly when the Washington Post reported over the weekend that the Taliban made it clear that the United States could have been in charge of security in the city of Kabul, that they did not want to go through the gates, they said in this story, and that all Joe Biden had to do was say, you stay out of Kabul, leave it all to us. We will set up the safe corridors. We will set up the transportation. We will get people to the airport. You stay out. But he didn't. And that's what needs to be investigated. It didn't have to be this way. And that is important for our nation. It's important for our military. And it's important for the Afghan people to learn how it could have come about that it's been done so badly. But beyond that, Michael, I've got to say, I think Republicans remain split. There remains a split in the party between the Bring Them Home Now, Forever Wars group, they view it as a forever war, and the group that could have made the case if they weren't so exhausted, that 2,500 troops in a support role so Afghanistan doesn't fall back into Taliban, Al-Qaeda hands, it doesn't become the place where the next attack will be planned from. We can do that, and it's not a forever war.
Ari, I appreciate your joining us and your wisdom and most of all your perspective. His best-selling book, Taking Heat, details his White House years. We will be right back on the MedVet Show. Michael Medved show, the political implications of what is going on right now are profound because people felt they may not have liked Joe Biden, but at least they knew him. But this is a side of Joe Biden, by the way, that has always been there. He was one of those people who counseled, for instance, when Barack Obama made the decision to send new troops into Afghanistan to prevent a prior collapse of the Afghan government and what we were facing over there. Biden was against it. He opposed sending of those troops. He reportedly counseled against going after Osama bin Laden and the raid where President Obama actually went forward, and we got Osama bin Laden. Biden had opposed that. So it was always there, this record of his eagerness to walk away from the Afghan war. But I'm not sure people believe that he meant it. And because Republicans were so profoundly divided on this issue, this never became an issue in the campaign. It never became an issue earlier in Biden's term. And remember, this is not the beginning of the Biden term now. And he had announced early on in April, when he had first become president, that he was going to go ahead and follow through on the commitment that Trump had made, just postponing it a couple of months later. But the ineptitude, the lack of preparation, which Ari Fleischer was just talking about on the air, it's all been appalling. And I think that one person who no one would claim is a hack partisan Republican or somebody who is a hack partisan Democrat, somebody who will automatically speak for or automatically speak against anything that Joe Biden does. I'm talking about Mitt Romney, who I think has achieved a reputation for integrity and a reputation for some political courage, sometimes going against his party. But not this time. Mitt Romney is very much critical of Joe Biden, as are some Democrats who are actually willing to speak up against him. Mitt Romney was on with Jake Tapper, and he had this to say about what is happening right now with American foreign policy and with our former allies in Afghanistan. This is Senator Romney.
Leaving Americans behind and leaving our Afghan friends behind who've worked with us would put upon us and will put upon us a moral stain. And this is the result of very ineffective decisions, terrible decisions made by the prior administration and by the current administration. This did not have to happen. It was preventable. And let me note, that's very different than the military. Our military came in at the very last moment and has performed admirably, as far as I can tell, to move people out as quickly as possible. But we didn't have to be in this rush circumstance with terrorists breathing down our neck. But it's really the responsibility of the prior administration and this administration that has caused this crisis to be upon us and has led to what is, without question, a humanitarian and foreign policy tragedy.
And what are the scope of that? What is the scope of that tragedy? There was perspective on it that was, I think, forcefully presented by Amna Nawaz, who was on PBS, Public Broadcasting System, which, again, generally is not a conservative outlet. But she had this to say about the chaotic manner in which this current administration has handled this withdrawal. Clip 11.
I think the focus on the evacuations, the focus on what we are immediately leaving behind, is absolutely necessary. I mean, part of this is the U.S. is, as we've seen, handing over control to the same forces they've been fighting for 20 years. They have yet to form a government. People on the ground are terrified. The evacuation was chaotic. Tens of thousands of people feel they're being left behind and they don't have a path out. And that government, you know, this leap of faith that the U.S. government feels they're making by trusting the Taliban to make good on their word, the people on the ground are not making that same leap of faith. They do not trust them. They've seen nothing from the Taliban over the last 20 years that leads them to believe this government's going to be any different on the ground than it was 20 years ago. And so there's a lot of concern. There's people saying there's already schools being closed, girls being pulled out of school. There were vengeance killings as the Taliban made their way across the country. There's some money held up, right? The U.S. can say you don't have access to your central bank reserves. The IMF has withheld billions of dollars. The Taliban need to actually govern and not just hold territory this time, but those are some carrots. There's not a lot of sticks if they don't live up to those promises.
And the idea that the most powerful nation on earth, with the most formidable and noble military on earth, the fact that we have not a lot of sticks against a ragtag bunch of barefoot, often fanatics, religious fanatics, this is an appalling situation. appalling situation. Adam Kinzinger, who fought for our armed services and put himself in harm's way before he became a congressman from Southern Illinois. Representative Kinzinger also, I think, makes a point that people really need to respect and recognize. This is Representative Adam Kinzinger, clip 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think there needs to be accountability. And I think, frankly, President Biden needs to take better ownership of this. You know, people have used the Kennedy Bay of Pigs analogy, where he took full responsibility and actually his poll numbers recovered, because that's what Americans want. They want leaders who take responsibility. So a firing or a removal or a resignation of a national security leader team should not be a kind of a scapegoat. I mean, ultimately, President Biden owns this, but we need to know what happens. And as far as, you know, my party's knee-jerk reaction, look, this is tragic. I agree that there was a ton of things done wrong. Calling for the impeachment of a president is not in line with what the Constitution prescribes. And secondarily, let's give it at least a potato or two, you know, before we start focusing on that only. I've been very critical of President Biden in this moment, because my hope is through that criticism we would be able to change kind of how we were doing things. I've been very critical of the prior president. But this country really needs to get back to where we see ourselves as Americans before, you know, party members and unfortunate members. And I think that is flipped around at this moment.
And how does it get flipped back? I mean, one of the things that I'm thinking of is that the next time President Biden faces the press, and it will be sometime the next couple of days, what does he say when he's asked about some of the comments of the parents of the people who died for their country, and comments that are directly personal about Joe Biden, and accusing him of stealing an election, accusing him of being troubled by dementia, accusing him of being a piece of crap, as one of the Gold Star parents who spoke up against him had to say. How does a president respond to that? And would someone ask it? Well, what do you say to the parents? Yes. And does the president say, I have nothing to say, I can't dignify? How do you not respond? And do you respond with a personal apology? I don't know, because even during the Vietnam War, and even during the controversial war in Iraq, yes, we had someone camping out at the Bush Ranch trying to stop the war. But this is now, it's not people trying to stop the war. It's people basically saying the entire handling was a mistake. 1-800-955-1776. We'll be back with one of the few uplifting stories from the last several days. Medved Show, we like to honor people, it seems to me, who exemplify the idea that there is greatness, that there is nobility, that there is heroism in ordinary people living here in our country, that America is by nature noble and great and compassionate and good. And that actually came up with a story that I think earns one of our occasional honors as a fanfare for the common man. And this has to do with I found profoundly moving and uplifting story that was actually featured on National Public Radio. And it was about some Vietnamese families that are moving heaven and earth to try to help Afghan immigrants. Why? Because they know them? Because there's some kind of connection? I mean, Vietnam and Afghanistan are very, very different countries, but they have something in common, which, of course, is refugees fleeing a brutal regime after a war in which they were deeply aligned with the United States of America. The NPR story says Bao Nguyen says he might not have existed if it weren't for American generosity toward Vietnamese refugees after the fall of Saigon in April of 1975. After seven attempts to flee Vietnam, his parents spent 6 months in a refugee camp in Hong Kong before being sponsored by a Jewish organization that allowed them to resettle in Wisconsin in 1979. A few years later, Nguyen, who is now a filmmaker based in Los Angeles, was born. "I'm a result and a product of a generous America," he told NPR. In the last week, as thousands of Afghans face an uncertain future under Taliban rule, Vietnamese Americans, many of whom are children of refugees, are calling on U.S. officials to let in as many Afghan refugees as possible and trying to assist the Afghans who are already landing in America. "I see sort of the lineage of American generosity because of those events. And I think it's almost my responsibility to pass that on to Afghani refugees and people who are trying to get to America," Nguyen said. Filmmaker Nguyen, he arrived in Los Angeles for the premiere of his documentary Live from New York in Los Angeles in 2015. "The empathy many Vietnamese Americans feel toward Afghan refugees has pushed them to take action. There's a group of Vietnamese American friends here in Seattle who are trying to pair 75 Vietnamese host families with 75 incoming Afghan families arriving in the Seattle-Tacoma area." That is a terrific thing, and it's a beautiful thing. And Jeremy, if we can find some of these folks, I'd love to try to help them, give people an opportunity to support this. 75 different Vietnamese host families in Seattle to host incoming Afghan refugees. Rose Avenue Bakery is an Asian American bakery in Washington, D.C. It's donating 10% of all proceeds from this weekend's sales to help with Afghan refugee resettlement efforts. Owner and baker Rosie Nguyen, whose parents were Vietnamese refugees, said, "Seeing the desperation of Afghans this week feels very personal to me. The perspective of my parents is going to be the same as these people," she said. "They're terrified. They're scared. They want a better life for themselves and for their children. So they're going to do anything and everything to do that. And when you can do that, you're giving up everything." Critics have pointed out the similarities between images from Kabul this week and Afghans departing desperately to flee their country, crowded the city's airport, and from Saigon when Americans pulled out of Vietnam. In the aftermath of Saigon, there were approximately 150,000 Vietnamese who were able to seek refuge on American soil. 4 years later, Jimmy Carter, president of the United States at that time, doubled the number of Indochinese refugees accepted, a move that was politically unpopular at the time. Only 34% of Americans supported that idea. I think the idea of welcoming Afghan refugees is much higher. There's a state representative named B. Nguyen who tweeted this week about how her parents found refuge in Iowa. She told NPR she would have liked political leaders to have responded more quickly with assisting Afghans, but she expects there will be a change in political will to increase the cap on refugees. Part of why many young Vietnamese Americans are speaking out and sharing their own parents' refugee stories is realizing the similar trauma that their parents experienced in leaving Vietnam and losing their country. Saigon, a refugee draws parallels between the fall of her home city and Kabul. The folks who are sharing these stories are not doing it because of a political angle, she said. They know their own family members or themselves were in a similar position. Our parents have been seen as a generation that was just trying to survive in many ways. And our generation is seen as going past the idea of surviving, but really thriving. And by thriving, I think we're able to speak up. I think it's very significant that if you look at how well refugees from Vietnam have done in this country, I think there are reasons to believe, based on previous Afghan immigrants to the United States, that there will be support for newcomers and that they will also, with God's help, do well. It's a touching story, and hearing the emotion with which Vietnamese Americans welcome the idea of actually helping and going out of their way to serve some of these desperate Afghani people. It's especially when you look at what's going on there. And it's very telling that one of the first things that the Taliban appear to have done, at least in neighborhoods of Kabul and in other cities, is to outlaw music and to basically indicate to people that this is a regime that wants nothing to do with civilization. We will be talking later in the show about some of the ongoing efforts here to try to integrate other issues and to relate it to the terrible suicide bombing that claimed the lives of those 13 American Marines. There was a statement by a prominent Democrat, a former governor, and former member of the cabinet, actually, who claimed, and again, a Democrat who claimed that the people who oppose masking are the equivalent of suicide bombers. Now, I do think that some of the people who oppose masking go too far, and denouncing this as a basic violation of liberty. Anti-maskers, anti-vaxxers can go too far. But comparing them to suicide bombers is completely outrageous. Arne Duncan, who was President Obama's Secretary of Education, compared the mindsets and actions of Afghan suicide bombers to anti-vaxxers and anti-mask Americans. He tweeted, "Have you noticed how strikingly similar both the mindsets and actions are between the suicide bombers at Kabul's airport and the anti-mask, anti-vax people here? They both blew themselves up. They inflict harm on others around them, and they are convinced they are fighting for freedom." Okay. Basically, refusing to wear a mask may be a mistake, but to compare it to murder, does this make any sense at all? We will get to that and some of the controversy that former Secretary of Education Duncan has brought up. And again, it strikes me as appalling. We will also go to the controversy. Is it true that until now, a girl who's a person of color could not even dream of becoming a popular star, a pop music star? That and more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.